I'm Michael Gagné from Montreal with Operation Salami. I guess, you know, historically, direct action comes out of the anarchist movements and was very used in the labor movement, etc., as a way of effecting concrete change without asking for permission, basically. A way of using our energy, our bodies, to either concretely resist what we despise, what we're trying to stop, or concretely create alternatives. For me, the best explanation of direct action I've heard came from a man named George Lakey, who worked with Martin Luther King and started an organization called Training for Change. And in his book called Strategy for a Living Revolution, he really puts direct action in the context of a strategy for revolution. And he talked about a five-phase theory of how a nonviolent revolution could happen in North America. And for the first phase, he talks about cultural preparation, which includes education, popular education, training, the arts, etc., getting ready, consciousness raising. The second phase, moving on to the realm of creating local alternatives, which he calls laboratories for revolution, you know, from food co-ops to women's and men's circles to free schools, etc. Then after that, wanting to go further and take it to the realm of direct action. Now, he says that the point of direct action is not that it's going to change the world in and of itself. And I agree with him here because it's not. You know, direct action is generally done by small groups, or at least small compared to the society as a whole. The other term that he uses for direct action puts the point of it more clearly. He calls it propaganda of the deed, which is what it is, that the of that third phase, the point of that conflict and confrontation is to get to the fourth phase of revolution, which he calls the most powerful phase that we have, or the most powerful tool we have at our disposal, and that's mass non-cooperation. Now, this is really built on the idea that the system rests upon our consent, fundamentally. You know, it's been said many times that power rests upon the consent of the governed. And so at the fourth phase, that's where we're big enough to really stop the machine, you know, just by not cooperating with it. And then the fifth phase, of course, is if you've toppled a system or stopped the machine, well, what do you replace it with? And so phase five is mass alternatives. I find that's the best strategy for revolution I've come across. And I really like it because a lot of people seem to have a direct action fetish these days, almost like, oh, you know, this big discussion of tactics. But, you know, to me, if you take the military metaphor, tactics are supposed to flow from strategy. You don't just choose them for the fun of it or because you're pissed off. Not if you want to win, at any rate. And I think we all do. I don't think we have the luxury of losing. So direct action for me is really about that. It's about the strength of the movement that you can build through using it. And direct action, it has a bunch of different purposes. It can reach out, it can highlight an issue, it can show clearly the violence of the system. And that, for me, is where issues of property destruction and everything become real questions. I personally don't think you can be violent towards property. I think it's an oxymoron. But I don't think it helps highlight the violence of the system either. And so it's an ongoing discussion. But I love direct action. I find that just as a philosophy in and of itself, it's about empowerment. It's about realizing that, you know, power comes from within first, and then we can have power with, but it challenges those systems of power over, as Starhawk puts it.
So how do you feel about how people are getting hurt by the system by doing direct action?
I think, again, that does show the violence of the system when that repression comes out. I think, you know, we're in Quebec City now with this 4-kilometer perimeter and this chain link fence and barbed wire and paramilitary police, etc. And so if we were to see things, you know, in terms of like what happened in Seattle, if we see that here, I think that could really dramatize the anti-democratic stuff that's going on. And the fascist nature of our state. But I feel like we can either help clarify things or we can play into that. And we can, to me, a lot of it is about the general public, you know. And for sure, I have critiques of a media-centric strategy and all of that. But I mean, we're not going to make a revolution with just the people you see here. It's not going to, I don't believe in vanguardism. I believe that we're going to have to build a lot more allies than we have right now. And that doesn't, I don't want to do that in a liberal way, but I think that if we're going to do it in a radical way, we have to organize in ways that don't alienate unnecessarily. And I feel that some of the stuff we do, you know, from breaking windows in a mass demo may feel good, and we may call it strategic because it raises some costs. But in terms of the other more strategic, that's the question. You know, what's most strategic? Not just what works, but what works best. And so I feel what works best is really, really taking the moral high ground and making that clear, you know, and not playing into, oh, people are bad if they break windows and stuff like that, but having open discussions about what works best to create mass, powerful, radical movements.
How do you feel about being open about your direct action to the general public in terms of plans? Like, some people try and be really closed and not let anyone know, and other people say we should open it up to everyone.
Right. Well, the group that I work with, or one of the groups that I work with primarily, Salami, one of our three organizing principles is transparency. For me, there's a lot of strengths to that. One is that it's very inclusive, you know, whereas secretive organizing appeals to some people, but I feel it tends to appeal to the more white male, macho, playing at revolution, you know, type people. I mean, which sounds more meaner than I mean it to be, but I feel that organizing openly is more courageous. It's challenging the structure to repress you. Whereas if you scurry around, and I understand that there's different situations on the planet, you know, and sometimes it seems like the only way to just survive day to day is to do it in secret. But say in Canada, where, you know, it's not a democracy, if you ask me, but we still have the capacity to organize openly and to organize very powerful actions openly. I feel by going underground, we feed into the security state, you know. We make it seem like they're justified in their surveillance, in their repression, etc. And generally, movements that have you know, organized secretively when they haven't had to have been repressed severely and have been broken. And I just don't feel we need to do that. I feel we're a lot more powerful otherwise.
How do you feel about infiltrators and the difference between secrecy and not secrecy in terms of infiltration?
For one, I think that secrecy invites infiltration, whereas with us, I mean, it doesn't matter if they're there, you know, and so we don't have to worry about it and get paranoid and stuff. Some would say that that's maybe a luxury of living in Canada kind of thing, or of being a privileged white male in Canada. But the fact is that I think that that is a situation for a lot of us, and we might as well use it, you know, rather than act like the situation is different.